Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's the BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for July 20th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This edition of the Bettors Box is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTBRadio. Good for a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Glad to be with you here for the final edition of Bang the Book Radio for this week. We'll have our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format coming your way next week as we get closer to the month of August. I'll update you on what's going on with the schedule when we go back to 5 days. Of course, I'm getting married August 11th, so a couple days off for that week. But we will be bringing you 5 days a week. We'll get back into the football swing of things. We'll still talk baseball as we go along and, of course, update some of the other things along the way, like golf and NASCAR and all that type of stuff. But we will predominantly be focused on football here in the month of August. We'll still have Bettors Box segments as part of Bang the Book Radio on Mondays and Thursdays when we do go back to the full slate of shows. But for now, just doing our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format. Keep in mind my picks analysis piece goes up every day at bangthebook.com. Also my daily fantasy piece. Tons of college football season win totals are available over there at the website. I think at some point here this week, I'll probably put together a master list, just list all the teams that we have done so far, and then the teams that we are still going to do. We've got Conference USA coming from Kyle Hunter. I'm going to be doing the top teams in the Mountain West and also the MAC, probably throw in BYU as well. I'm not sure if our other writer is doing Notre Dame, but I'm working on the AAC right now. I've got South Florida and Temple posted yesterday, one of my favorite conferences to write about and discuss. So all those season win total previews on picks over there at bangthebook.com. Lots of other content going up over there as well, not to mention a new homepage. It's a cleaner look for us, more streamlined in terms of updating our content. So hopefully you've been able to take advantage of that. We do have our contest going on over at bangthebook.com as well, our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, and then the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. No purchase necessary with those. Cash prizes are available for those that show well in those contests. So keep up to date with that. And then, of course, as football season rolls around, you'll have a lot more options of things to do there with those contests. So hopefully you'll be able to take home a little bit of cash in the process. As far as today's edition of the Bettors Box goes, we'll go beyond the box score where I'll break down the trades that have happened here this week and then also look at a couple of series. We're going to talk about some splits, outliers in Major League Baseball, teams that are doing a bit better than they should or a bit worse than they should against lefties and righties. Hopefully we can get some wagering angles out of that. We'll look at our down-the-line segment per usual, then I'll talk about what I'm looking for here this weekend. So let's go ahead and get started with this Thursday edition of the Bettors Box. A couple of trades to talk about. The first one, J.D. Martinez going to the Arizona Diamondbacks in exchange for a collection of prospects and futures. Now, J.D. Martinez is a really big move for Arizona. He's not a bad defensive outfielder, which is very important because one of Arizona's biggest assets this season has been the team defense. The infield is very, very good. The outfield is quite good with a guy like A.J. Pollock running around out there as well. So this doesn't really hurt them that much defensively. Also, when you consider a guy like Yasmani Tomas would be coming back here at some point this year, he's not great defensively. J.D. Martinez is probably a little bit better than him. So this is a very good move for them all around, really, you know, because he doesn't hurt them defensively. And then obviously his offensive contributions speak for themselves. Now he goes from a pretty bad hitter's park in Comerica Park to a very good hitter's park in Chase Field. Comerica has gotten better as the summer has gone on, but very, very deep dimensions to the outfield. Chase Field is a larger park as well, but the ball carries much better there. We'll see what happens with the humidor next year. But if you do believe in lineup protection, and I don't, but if you do, obviously he's a very important asset to have behind Paul Goldschmidt. You know, if the opposition decides to pitch around Goldschmidt, well, they got to deal with J.D. Martinez. So this is a move that helps the Diamondbacks out quite a bit. Also, it helps them against both sides of the split. He's good against righties. He's good against lefties. He is a rental player, so the Diamondbacks probably won't have him next year unless they give him an extension. But you know, still a very, very strong move for Arizona there to bolster what is already a pretty good offense. And also, you know, I've talked about the Arizona offense here, and we've seen it a little bit in recent days, is that, you know, I thought that this was a group that was overachieving offensively. I felt that this was a team that was going to take some steps back, especially in those higher leverage plate appearances. It has happened. They have not played well. They're 4-12 over their last 16 games. But J.D. Martinez can help with that, can stave off some of that regression that is impending there. So, again, a move that works from all sides for the Diamondbacks. Now, as far as the Tigers go, the industry opinion on this deal is that the Tigers could have done better, could have gotten more. They had another 12 or 13 days to wait out some teams, see if they were willing to increase their offers. The Indians were reportedly interested in J.D. Martinez, but Al Avila not interested in dealing within the division. That's an entirely different topic. I really don't understand that. But in any event, they do decide on this Arizona package. Now, for one thing, kudos to them for this, because this is a Detroit organization that is going down the tubes in a hurry right now. They have immovable contracts of guys like Miguel Cabrera, Justin Verlander, Jordan Zimmerman, Ian Kinsler's on the wrong side of the aging curve. They don't have a whole lot to be excited about for the future. So getting anything that infuses this system with some talent is a very good thing. You know, they've spent too much at the big league level on free agents that were bad investments, and they haven't really invested enough in the organization as a whole from a talent standpoint. So getting some guys in here certainly does help. Now, is this move a precursor to something more? It certainly could be. One of the things that people aren't talking about a whole lot, and maybe Justin Upton's happy in Detroit, so maybe this is a moot point, but Justin Upton has an opt-out clause in his contract after this season. Makes $22.125 million per year. Does he get that on the open market if he opts out? I don't know, but this is a situation where the Tigers may look to move him. He's having a very good season. You know, if he's interested in moving on with his career after this year, the Tigers can't really afford to lose him for nothing. Now, they would save some money on the back end of this deal, and obviously that's some money that they could use to pay the exorbitant rates that they're paying Miguel Cabrera, Justin Verlander, and Jordan Zimmerman. But also, if you have the chance to trade a guy like Upton, who is having a quality season, like I said, it's something that you have to explore. They've been talking about maybe moving Verlander if someone's willing to take on some of that contract. And look, for Detroit, they'd probably have to eat the entire Verlander contract, given what's going on with him this season, given the workload on his arm, given his age. I don't know if they're willing to do that. But Upton gives them a unique opportunity to get out of what is not a bad contract per se, but a contract that doesn't help them, because this is a team that, you know, has these aging former star players. They're going to be buried by the Indians in this division. The White Sox are building something, as I'll talk about here in a couple of minutes. The Tigers could possibly move Justin Upton. I think Justin Wilson is definitely a guy that goes, because teams are looking to overpay for bullpen help at the deadline. Another name that could be on the move from Detroit is Jose Iglesias. Not much with the stick, but pretty good defensively. A team that's looking for a defensive upgrade at shortstop may be interested in a guy like Iglesias. So for the Tigers, a lot of moving parts here, a lot of spinning plates over the next 11 days, but don't be surprised if a guy like Upton does wind up going. Everyone's talking about Cabrera and Verlander. Upton may be the big contract that does get moved out of Motown. The New York Yankees, with a very, very big move, they picked up Todd Frazier, David Robertson, and Tommy Conley from the Chicago White Sox for a collection of prospects. Let's start with Frazier here, because a lot of people obviously want to look at Robertson and Conley, and I will get to them, and you know, they are two very important assets for this team. But the Yankees are 23rd in WOBA at the third base position and 29th in WOBA at the first base position. Todd Frazier helps in both spots. He's still pretty good with the glove at third base, can play first base. Chase Headley's having a decent year, but he has absolutely no power. And to have no power at Yankee Stadium is a really disappointing development. That was a move that just didn't work out for the Yankees. Now they've got Frazier, who, look, low batting average, but a high walk rate, still has power. Like I said, he's an asset defensively. That's a really good move for the Yankees. It's a low-risk move, because you know what you're getting in a guy like Todd Frazier, who actually is a decent base runner as well, which is something where he could provide a little bit of surplus value for the Yankees. Now, obviously, Robertson and Conley, you know, two guys that really strengthened the pen. They jettisoned Tyler Clippard in this deal. Clippard wasn't what he was expected to be this season. A lot of workload on that arm. And, you know, this is a situation now where you've got Robertson, Conley, Chapman, and Betances to finish out the ballgame for you. It's hard to acquire starting pitching. I mean, you look at the package that the Cubs gave up for Jose Quintana. Now, of course, Quintana is a controlled asset, so it is a bigger package you have to trade for him. But you know, the Yankees aren't willing to move Dustin Fowler, Clint Frazier, Gleyber Torres. They don't want to move these guys. Chad Green. I'm sure people have asked about Chad Green as well. The Yankees don't want to move those guys. So what happens is it's hard for you to get a starting pitcher. Teams will trade bullpen assets. David Robertson's an expiring contract. The White Sox are going to move him. Getting Conley in the deal is a little bit surprising because he's not an expiring contract, but the White Sox did what they needed to do to get the players that they wanted. When you start talking about acquiring starting pitchers, whether it's somebody like a Sonny Gray, even a rental like a Trevor Cahill, you start talking about having to give up bigger pieces. And for the Yankees here, they weren't willing to move those guys. So what they did was they strengthened the bullpen as much as they possibly could to try and limit the exposure of what is a below-average starting staff. Luis Severino is good. Jordan Montgomery is solid. But, you know, Masahiro Tanaka, you don't know what you're going to get from him on a daily basis. CC Sabathia is in decline. Obviously, the Michael Pineda thing is a big deal for the Yankees. I don't know why Chad Green's not in this rotation yet. With the bullpen depth, he most definitely should be. The Yankees, I think they could be in play for somebody like a Trevor Cahill here. I don't think they go the Lance Lynn route or something like that, but I think they could put themselves in a position to get a starter, somebody that's a number three, number four guy that can boost this rotation a little bit. But you got to give Brian Cashman credit for going out there, being aggressive, getting two very good relievers that fit very nicely in this bullpen, and doing so without giving up the top guys in the system. That's a really good job by him. Again, I think Chad Green moves to the rotation, which is almost like a pseudo trade deadline deal in and of itself. So the Yankees, you know, I'll talk about this in a little bit here when I look at the Yankees for this series coming up this weekend, but this is now a team where, you know, really for the most part, you look at their lines and you say, okay, can their starter keep them in the game? Because their bullpen is dominant. And if you feel like the starter can keep them in the game, sort of like what we see today with this line between Luis Severino and Felix Hernandez, Severino opens minus 115. The Yankees are in a bad spot here. They looked lifeless yesterday against the Twins and Jose Berrios. It's been a tough start to the second half with that long Boston series. Then they have to go all the way out to Seattle. Not a great situational spot for them, but you look at Severino as a guy and you say, okay, at worst, he keeps us in the ballgame. At best, he turns this thing over to the bullpen with a lead, and we've got four premier relief arms that we can go to. So when you look at the Yankees at minus 115, you start thinking to yourself, okay, if this is a tie game after five, am I laying minus 115 with this Yankees bullpen? I think unequivocally the answer is yes, every day, unless, you know, some of these guys aren't available. So really changes the dynamic here for the Yankees, and it was a good move by Cashman. Also a good move by the Chicago White Sox. You know, this is a team that's really building up a high-ceiling, high-upside minor league system. Yoan Moncada gets the call up here this week. Still waiting on Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez, but they got Eloy Jimenez last week. This is a team that's really building up an impressive farm system, and this is the right time to do it because the Indians are the clear front-runner in the Central, not just this year, but next year as well. And then after that, with Andrew Miller and Cody Allen off the books, you know, their starting pitchers getting older. Corey Kluber will be in his mid-30s. Carlos Carrasco, you know, well on the wrong side of 30 at that point. Then the White Sox set themselves up for a run at this thing. So I love what Rick Hahn is doing. What Rick Hahn is doing makes up for the fact that he couldn't contend with Sale, Quintana, Abreu, Adam Eaton. You know, that was a really disappointing job by him. But this rebuild is off to a great start. They still have some pieces to move. I think Dan Jennings probably the next guy to go here for the White Sox as teams look for some left-handed relief help, but they'll still be active with whatever they can move around. So as far as the rest of the trade deadline goes, you know, obviously we don't want to give too much analysis on these things until they happen. This isn't a podcast about speculation. This is a podcast about, you know, how things have an impact in the betting market. But you know Sonny Gray is going to get traded over the next 11 days. Oakland picked up Chris Carter. He's your stopgap for Yonder Alonso. Maybe Yonder Alonso goes to New York. Then you've got Frazier at third, Alonso at first. Two huge upgrades on the corners if the Yankees are able to do that. But also with the A's, Jed Lowry will probably go. Lowry's on a very affordable option for next year. So some team that needs infielder help or some team that's losing maybe a second or third baseman or a shortstop for next season will be very interested in a guy like Jed Lowry. Along the same lines, Eduardo Nunez from the Giants, he'll be very much available. The Indians are sniffing around with that. The Indians were sniffing around on Nunez last year when he was with the Twins. He wound up getting traded to the Giants, had some hamstring issues here, but Terry Francona loves versatility. He has not had a true utility infielder. I think Nunez could be that guy. And, of course, with the Giants rumored to be linked to Pablo Sandoval again, there's your replacement for Nunez when Nunez gets traded. So that'll be a move I would expect to see. And, again, Cleveland, a potential landing spot there for a guy like Nunez. Now, that's not a guy that moves the market, obviously, but he strengthens the depth of this team. The bench is not very good for the Indians, and it hasn't been for a while. You know, they have a very good starting nine. After that, things drop off a little bit. A guy like Nunez certainly fits in from a versatility standpoint and also can be a guy that can have an impact on the base paths once the playoffs roll around. Trevor Cahill will go. I don't know if it'll be sooner. I don't know if it'll be later, but lots of suitors for a starting pitcher. And also, Cahill's comfortable coming out of the bullpen. A lot of times you don't see guys like that available here at the trade deadline. David Phelps is another one. The Mariners have been linked to him here this morning. These guys that can start and have started are great. You know, starting pitchers are fantastic. When you get to the playoffs, you don't want to send a starter through the lineup a third time. So a guy like Cahill, for example, if he doesn't make the playoff rotation, has pitched out of the bullpen, can pitch that fourth, fifth, and sixth inning stretch. Very, very important to bridge the gap to the specialized relievers. I think Cahill goes for a very surprising package here at the trade deadline. I think he's a guy that a lot of teams are going to be very interested in because, again, he's durable and he's versatile and has that ability to pitch in a lot of different roles. The Blue Jays come to Cleveland this weekend, and they could be sellers. You know, I think Jose Bautista is available now. Cleveland may be a fit with him. You know, do they move somebody like a Marcus Stroman? Do they move a Jay Happ? Do they move some of their bullpen pieces? You know, this is a team that has fell well short of expectations. Injuries and sequencing are the big reasons why. But you know, in this marketplace, if you can move a guy, you want to look to do it. You want to look to strengthen that farm system. And again, I think one of the things that has to be considered here with Toronto is that they're backed by Rogers Communications, so they have tons of money in the till. But they went and brought in a guy like Mark Shapiro, who is accustomed to working in a small market in Cleveland. You know, the Indians have not spent money, for the most part, for a long time. They've started to spend now. They've got a minority owner. They've gotten some more investment from that standpoint. And, of course, playoff revenue doesn't hurt. But when Shapiro was with the Indians, it was all about finding bargains. It was all about finding surplus value, finding inefficiencies to beat people to in the market. You would think a team backed by a communications conglomerate wouldn't have to worry about that. But the Blue Jays went the Shapiro route. And that leads me to believe that we're probably going to see, you know, some financial, not restrictions, but probably, you know, some they're going to spend less money, I would say. And what happens with that is that you have to build up a farm system because you have to have those young controlled players that you get 6 years out of before they hit free agency. So I think in that respect, we could see a little bit of pressure on Toronto to move some of that salary, bring in some younger, higher upside, you know, prospects, maybe even single A and double A guys, maybe not even major league ready guys. It wouldn't shock me, you know, to see that. And if the Blue Jays do not play well here over the next week, maybe we start to see a little bit of that desperation hit, and they may start to move some guys. Again, it probably won't happen this weekend, but we could see that before the deadline. One other team I want to mention here is the Boston Red Sox. And the Boston Red Sox have the worst WOBA, weighted on base average, in Major League Baseball from their third baseman. I think they're going to get somebody. You know, Yangervis Solarte out in San Diego, who is hurt right now and has been hurt off and on throughout the year, could be a guy for them to go get, as Drubal Cabrera has been linked to a few different teams. He's not really an impact guy. I do wonder if the Red Sox have been on the phone with the Texas Rangers saying, what do you want for Adrian Beltre? What do we have to give up? Can we get him to waive his 10-5 rights to come play for the Red Sox? I don't know if that happens. I don't think it does. But if I'm the Red Sox, I have to look big here. Because you can get a marginal upgrade at third base, and it will help them because of what they have with the rest of the team. But if you can go out there and get an impact-type player, that's what you need to be looking at. And the Red Sox, you know, they draft and develop well. So they have a system where they have some guys they can move around a little bit. I think that we do see them try to make a pretty big splash here in this whole thing because you know, they have to have concerns about the rotation. They have to have concerns about middle relief, and they'll probably get some middle relievers as well. But that third base hole you know, you try to right a wrong because you picked up Tyler Thornburg for Travis Shaw. Shaw's had a huge season in Milwaukee. Thornburg hasn't pitched at all. You know, Dave Dombrowski's not the type to let that just go by. And he's a guy that when he gets into situations where there's a lot of money, he will spend it frivolously. He did it in Detroit. See what's happening with them now. And you look at what's going on with Boston. They're lucky to have a young core of guys like Bogarts, Betts, you know, that type, Jackie Bradley Jr. But, you know, he will throw money at problems as long as ownership lets him. So if he can do that here at this stage of the game, I think Boston is a team that we want to pay very close attention to as the trade deadline approaches, because they're separating themselves a little bit in the American League East, and they just need that last piece to really be a threat to a team like the Astros, you know, or be a threat to a team like the Indians, who I still think are ahead of the Red Sox solely because of the pitching strength that the Indians have with Kluber, Carrasco, Miller, and Allen. So again, things will be very busy here over the next 11 days, and I'll give you some analysis on the trade deadline as some of these deals break. As far as our traditional Beyond the Box Score format, a couple series to look at here. The Rockies, they crushed the Padres, scored 36 runs in the three-game series, let out a ton of frustration. Nolan Arenado had 7 RBI on Wednesday, hit 3 dingers. Trevor Story had a big day as well. That's the big story, pardon the pun, of this series for me, is that the Rockies' offense was a total team effort. You know, Arenado had a huge day on Wednesday, but everybody got involved. Now, of course, we can just say, hey, it's the Padres, and yeah, that's a very valid concern. But this Rockies offense has underachieved throughout the season. It has been below average. Coors Field adjusts some of the metrics, but when you park adjust for Coors Field, they have not been good at all. And to have a big series like this, to get some, you know, some big-time offensive performances, to get a good start from John Gray in the finale there on Wednesday, very, very important for them. From a Padres standpoint, this team is a mess. Clayton Richard has pitched himself into no trade value. Trevor Cahill will get moved. Hunter Renfro's hurt. Will Myers and Manuel Margot really struggling right now in the lineup. What's hard about teams like this is that the Padres knew that they were going to be bad, but living through being that bad is a lot to take on. You know, this is why sometimes teams do lose 100 games, because again, every team's going to win 60 games in Major League Baseball. But that grind of getting up, going to the ballpark, getting your ass kicked every day, it's hard on guys. You know, you don't make it to the big leagues by being somebody that kind of scraped by. You make it to the big leagues by being really good and generally playing on a lot of winning teams because you were on them. You know, so you get to that big league level and you're losing, you know, 7 out of 10 games. That's hard to deal with. That's very hard to deal with. And for the Padres right now, maybe they ran into a little bit of that there against Colorado. Also, Colorado, you know, was in the dumps for so long. There was some positive regression coming there with that. But what will be interesting to see is how Colorado keeps going from this and then how the Padres can respond. Because the Padres are a team that the market has been backing with some regularity here lately. You know, is this a sign of what's to come for the Padres, or was this just one of those outlier series where they were at Coors Field, didn't get any starting pitching? It happens. We move on. The Seattle Mariners, they just won't go away. They won the series against Houston. Now, they have gone away in the AL West because everybody has gone away in the AL West. But Seattle looking to fight for one of those wild card spots. James Paxton was brilliant on Wednesday. The bullpen has stabilized a little bit. This offense is still good. You know, I wonder if the Mariners could be a sneaky buyer looking for a wild card run. I talked about it already. They've been linked to David Phelps here so far this morning. They could use some starting pitching. I don't know if they'd use Phelps as a starter or as a reliever, but again, that's a team where maybe a guy like Trevor Cahill could go, and the Mariners could sign him to an extension. You know, he's making a very low base salary this year. He is a free agent at the end of the year. He's pitched himself into a pretty decent contract, but the Mariners need arms. Felix Hernandez is on the tail end of his career already, and he's barely on the other side of 30. Drew Smyly seems like he's never going to be healthy. They need arms. Asashi Iwakuma, you know, that was a signing that came with a lot of risk because of his age and because of his workload over in Japan. They need arms. Maybe they get a guy like Cahill. Maybe they can be a team that, you know, can go out there and make some noise in this wild card race. As far as Houston goes, obviously no sweat off of their backs here with this series. Bought Carlos Correa out for about 6 weeks, if not more. The same thumb injury that Mike Trout had cost him 7 weeks. Now, the Astros have a lot of depth, so I'm not worried about this at all. You know, Marwin Gonzalez can just play every day now. They've got plenty of outfield pieces to work in. Lots and lots of depth. Now, they are looking to buy here at the deadline, looking to get some starting pitching help. They've been linked to Sonny Gray. But you know, one of the things I think is worth looking at here with teams like Houston and also the Washington Nationals, who I'll talk about later in the show, these are teams that are going to start playing better competition, because the way the schedule is set up is you play a lot of division games in April and a lot of division games in September. When you step outside of a bad division, that's when things can get a little bit more challenging. You know, for Houston here, you know, obviously they're dominating the West, and there's no team above 500 in the West. Same thing for the Nationals. You know, they're playing in the NL East. Nobody's above 500 in the NL East. Could find some value going against the Astros here. I think they do cool off a little bit. They're on pace to win 107 games. That is very, very hard to do. I think we will have some opportunities, if you can stand it, to go against Houston here over the next couple of weeks. So as I mentioned, I wanted to talk about some splits, outliers in Major League Baseball here. For example, the Chicago White Sox against left-handed pitching. They were the top team in WOBA throughout Major League Baseball for a couple of weeks, maybe even a month or so. Now they're down to sixth, but they still have a .343 batting average on balls in play. That will drop. The White Sox do not have a sustainable profile against left-handed pitching. They're living off of a very high BABIP right now. They don't hit for a ton of power, and they don't walk. So once those balls in play start finding fielders as opposed to green patches of grass, that's when you start to drop off in some of these splits. So the White Sox, while they've been really good against lefties, I think that's a trend that's going to stop now from this point forward. So the White Sox, to me, are a straight fade team. They're not good against righties. I think they drop off against lefties. They don't have a whole lot in the rotation to get excited about now with Quintana gone. They are a straight fade team to me. And again, you're going to lay big prices to do it, but maybe we can still get some fool's gold, so to speak, when they face lefties, because people are going to remember, hey, they do pretty well against lefties. I think that's something that continues to tail off throughout the season. So fading the White Sox against lefties does make some sense to me, because I think that you're going to get better prices than to do that against righties. I would also look for the Yankees to tail off a little bit against right-handed pitching. They have a .347 WOBA, which is tied for second, .117 weighted runs created plus, which is second, but their .323 BABIP in that split is the second highest in Major League Baseball behind the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, they have some injury problems, and Starlin Castro has not been the same since he got back. Aaron Judge has cooled off a little bit. So the Yankees, to me, are a team that I would look to fade a little bit here against right-handed pitching, because I think some of their numbers do start to normalize a little bit. Speaking of teams to fade against right-handed pitching, I just talked about them, the Houston Astros. They have a .365 WOBA against right-handed pitching. The highest last year was .348. That was Boston. The highest year before, .341. That was Toronto. In 2014, the highest was the Rockies at .333. Now, the league-wide power increase is clearly a factor. But the Astros have a .319 BABIP with a .507 slugging percentage. And again, that .365 WOBA is a huge outlier. You're facing a right-handed pitcher roughly 70% of the time in terms of plate appearances. It is very hard to sustain a team-wide pace like that with a .365 WOBA. So I think the Astros do cool off a bit here offensively, and I think it does happen against right-handed pitching. So that's an angle that I will be looking to play here. And again, when I talk about playing these angles, it's no fun. It's not fun to go against the Astros, but you're getting plus money on the opposite side against whoever they're playing. You know, that lowers your break-even percentage. If you're catching 45% of those or 40% of those or something like that, you know, then you can make a nice little chunk of change over a little bit of a period of time. So the Astros against righties, I would expect a drop-off there from them in that situation. Speaking of a team, I think we can see some positive gains, the Chicago Cubs. They have a .280 BABIP against right-handed pitching. Now we'll see, you know, how Chris Bryant fares with the finger injury that he has, but just a .318 WOBA for the Cubs against righties. There's way too much talent on this ball club for that. I think they've severely underachieved in that split. They've been better against lefties, but this is a team that has enough lineup balance, has enough good hitters to be good against both sides of the mound, and I think they should get better against righties. Now, they've been playing better as it is. They're chasing down the Brewers. They're going to pass the Brewers here probably within the next week and a half or so, but they are a team that I will look to back when they're facing right-handed pitchers, even the good ones, because they've got some positive regression coming in that split as far as I'm concerned. Another one here is the New York Mets. Now, the New York Mets are a team that I've beaten up on this show a lot this season. I've talked about how poorly they handle injuries. I've talked about how poor of a manager Terry Collins is. Some of their decisions with guys like Michael Conforto just make no sense to me. But the Mets have just a 274 BABIP against right-handed pitching this season. Now, keep in mind, home runs don't count towards BABIP. So they are 10th in WOBA, despite the low BABIP. But I think that they should get a little bit more balanced as the season goes along. I think this is a Mets team that, you know, has some good left-handed bats, has the ability to do better than they've done against right-handed pitching. Now, we'll see what happens in trades. We'll see if Curtis Granderson gets moved. We'll see if maybe Lucas Duda gets moved, because there's a chance of that as well. But if everything stays intact with the Mets, I think this is an offense that should get better against righties. Now, with their pitching problems and their bullpen concerns, and Addison Reed probably does get moved here, maybe you don't play the Mets straight on the money line, but I do think that you can find some good opportunities to play them, maybe from a team total standpoint, against righties. One other team to look at here, this one's against lefties. That's the Colorado Rockies. They have a 355 BABIP against left-handed pitching. That will come down. Yes, there's a course field inflation. Yes, they generally have a high BABIP, but it's hard to carry a 355 BABIP against lefties. So I think I would look to fade Colorado against left-handed pitching. They should see a reversal of fortunes there in that split. And that is something I will look to play both at home and on the road with Colorado as we go forward here throughout the rest of the regular season. Down the line segment here, I just want to make a quick note that when I talk about the openers, I'm talking about the openers from Pinnacle, or from Bookmaker, excuse me, not from Pinnacle. Pinnacle is the best resource, I think, for checking on line moves and seeing what kind of line movement we've seen. But Bookmaker generally hits the offshore board first, which is why I talk about them, because people hit these initial lines, then the other shops open. Pinnacle is the sharpest in terms of lines for baseball, and really almost in terms of lines for every sport in the offshore market. But I just wanted to clarify that these openers do come from Bookmaker when I talk about what's going on out there in the marketplace. So on Tuesday, we saw a move on the Pirates. That was Junior Guerra against Ivan Nova. People are fading the Brewers. The Cubs are going to catch them. Like I said, it is even possible that the Pirates catch them. The Brewers are just in a tough spot right now. Chase Anderson hurt has not helped them at all. Their offense has been very, very inconsistent. We saw a move against them on Tuesday. Kind of surprised we didn't see one on Thursday. I haven't had a chance to look here while I've been recording, but you know, I do think that people are not rushing to back the Brewers right now. And this is something that we saw start well before the All-Star break. And it's something that has continued now to this point. Saw a huge move on Robbie Ray against Cel Romano in the Diamondbacks-Reds matchup there on Tuesday. I talked about Robbie Ray. Regression is coming for him. It didn't come on Thursday or on Tuesday. He actually didn't pitch all that well. I think he only gave up 2 runs. I think he walked 3 and only struck out 4. So still had a little bit of BABIP and left on base percentage luck there with that. But the market buried that number, upwards of 30 to 40 cents worth of line movement there in that one. I think what we've seen here is that the market has over-adjusted the Diamondbacks, because people were fading the Diamondbacks coming into the break. They did not play well coming into the break or immediately out of the break. So the odds makers over-adjusted this. And also we've seen some movement on the Reds. So when this number came out in the minus 125 range, it was way too low. It's just the way it is. And that's why it closed in the minus 160 range at some shops, because it was just a bad number. And that still happens, you know, especially when you've got a team like the Diamondbacks who hasn't played well. It was played well throughout the season, but hasn't played well of late. And a team like the Reds, who people have been backing a lot, you know, you try to limit your exposure a little bit if you're a sports book. And sometimes what happens is you just put up a bad line. And that was the case there in that one. We saw Clayton Kershaw go from a $3 favorite to a $3.30 favorite against the White Sox. He dominated. That was not a surprise at all. But one thing that, you know, we have noticed here this year, Kershaw, Sale, Kluber, not to the same extent Scherzer, but the really elite of the elite starting pitchers in Major League Baseball have taken on money. Doesn't matter what the line has been. They've taken on money a lot here this season. I think it just speaks to what's going on in baseball right now this year, where, you know, you've got a lot of bad starting pitchers, and the ones that are good are really, really damn good. So we see those guys take on money when they do take them out. So a flipped favorite in the game between the Tigers and the Royals, that was Matt Boyd and Travis Wood in that one. The Tigers do lead Major League Baseball in WOBA against left-handed pitching. We'll see if that stays the same with J.D. Martinez out of the equation, but that explains the reason for the flipped favorite there. Also, we saw some pretty big movement on Michael Fulmer today here, too, on Thursday. It's just one of those spots where again, the market faded the Tigers for a while. Now they're coming back on the Tigers because books have over-adjusted. And that's been the situation here in this series with the Royals. So a huge fade of Antonio Senzatella as he came back for the Rockies. He didn't pitch well, but he got a ton of run support again. He's gotten like 8 runs per starter, some absurd number like that this year. But the Rockies did win that one, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, they swept the Padres and had no problem doing that. So a fade of the Nationals on Tuesday night. Edwin Jackson made the start there. Feels like this guy's been around forever, and I actually saw Mike Petrella tweeting about this on Tuesday. He's only 31 or 32, something like that, which is remarkable because it feels like he's been around forever. But the market fading him, not a surprise. Hasn't been a good pitcher for a while. But the Nationals scored, I think, 11 runs in that game. I won that one comfortably. We saw money come in on Mike Clevenger. I actually thought this number would close closer to minus 150. Got as high as minus 145 at some places, but that came in on the Indians. That was a fade of Ty Block. The Indians didn't hit Ty Block and then threw the game away in the late innings. So those that got in front of the steam on Clevenger still had a loser there in that one. Wednesday, we saw a flipped favorite, the day game between the Astros and the Mariners. That was James Paxton against Charlie Morton. Morton just a few starts back into his rhythm after coming off the DL. Paxton's been phenomenal this year, was phenomenal again on Wednesday, and the Mariners won that game. We saw money come in against Sonny Gray, which has been a rarity this season. Sonny Gray has taken on money almost every start that he's made. Not this time, though. Tampa Bay and Jacob Faria took the money in that one. Gray and the A's were a winner. Sonny Gray, could that have been his last start with Oakland? Maybe it could have. And I'll be very curious to see, depending on where he ends up, what happens with the lines in his games. Because, again, he's taken on money start after start after start while having a bad defense and an inconsistent offense. If he goes to a team where he's got a good defense and an improved offense, or at least a more consistent offense, do we even have value on Sonny Gray at that point? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. Carlos Carrasco's steam came in. The Indians pissed that one away because that's what they do this year. Garrett Cole money came in on the Pirates. That was a fade of Zach Davies and the Brewers. Again, going to keep seeing this. And the Pirates are a team that is playing a lot better right now. You know, ever since they stabilized the bullpen, Felipe Rivero's been phenomenal in the closer's role. They've been much better. Andrew McCutchen is hitting the ball well. Gregory Polanco's come out of his funk. The Pirates are an interesting team here going forward. You know, a guy like Josh Bell's hit, I think, 17 or 18 home runs. The Pirates may be a team that, you know, gets steamed a lot here over the next little while because people are starting to adjust. Cole is pitching better. Jameson Taillon's been phenomenal since he came back from getting cancer treatment. The Pirates may be a buy team right now, so long as they're not looking to move anybody here as they get closer to the trade deadline, and I don't think they should because this isn't a team making a run at the wild card. But it's a team that still has a shot in the division. Interesting to see some Zach Greinke money come in here on Wednesday as a fade of the Reds. I'm guessing that was an adjustment to JD Martinez being in the lineup. I think people have adjusted this Arizona lineup a little bit with the inclusion of Martinez, and maybe that wasn't properly factored into the line. But again, that was a situation where the Reds have been taking money. Diamondbacks have struggled. Maybe it was just a price that was set a little bit too low. Money came in on Kenta Maeda and the Dodgers. That was against Carlos Rodon and the White Sox. It is really terrifying to me that the Dodgers are killing lefties now, too. I mean, last year they were abhorrent against lefties, and the year before they weren't very good either. This year, they're second in WOBA against lefties. This team has no weaknesses. I don't know what they do at the deadline to try and strengthen themselves, but they have no weaknesses, and they wound up winning that game, of course. Washington and the Angels, flip favorite here. I'm upset that I missed this one. I didn't write about it, didn't notice it. But I've been talking about fading Joe Gonzalez. Has some peripherals that I don't like. While the Angels beat the Nationals 7-0 yesterday, it was behind Alex Meyer. But I've been talking about fading Joe Gonzalez. That's still a thing. Like I said, I'm upset that I missed it yesterday, but I would still look to fade him to be sure. We saw a lot of movement here as a flip favorite, the Diamondbacks and Reds, but now Taiwan Walker's been scratched. So that movement this morning doesn't really matter a whole lot unless somebody found out about it and was just playing action on that game. But Taiwan Walker not making that start for the Diamondbacks. So a lot of that line movement, null and void there in that game. The Yankees are taking money against the Mariners. Like I mentioned, it's a tough travel spot to go from Minnesota to Seattle. Tough start to the second half, but I believe in the bullpen. I believe in fading Felix. The Yankees do make some sense to me here tonight, now in the minus 125, minus 130 range. So that would be a lean that I have. But my pick for today, and this is very rare for me, but but I like the Texas Rangers. This is a flip favorite situation where Texas was favored about minus 115, minus 118, something like that. Then Baltimore was favored minus 115. Now we're seeing some Rangers buy back. But Cole Hamels has been really good in his last three starts. And when you're a guy with a track record like Cole Hamels, I don't need a whole lot to come to the conclusion that you've probably figured it out. Now, he was hurt early in the year. I think he had a back and a neck issue, and then, of course, he had an oblique strain. But he's been really good over his last three starts. Wade Miley is not good. You know, Wade Miley may show some signs of positive regression now, but he has no command. He has a 400 BABIP against over his last 10 starts. That's not all luck, folks. A lot of that is just not being able to command the ball in the strike zone. The Rangers are not a good team. They're not good against lefties. They have plenty of problems. But I'm a believer in Hamels, and I'm looking to fade Baltimore in this tailspin that they're in. So my pick for today is the Rangers. Again, you won't hear me that very often because I haven't been a believer in this team for a while. But I do like this spot for them with Hamels going up against a bad pitcher in Miley. I think the Rangers are in a good situation here tonight. So what am I looking at for this weekend? Well, watching the trade market, those trade rumors, you know, we saw two huge deals on July 18th, 13 days in advance of the trade deadline. So what happens the rest of the way? I don't know, but it could be very, very interesting to see what goes on. But you've got the Quintana deal already, the Robertson and Conley deal, the J.D. Martinez deal, you know, does Sonny Gray go this weekend? What happens? Lots of stuff to keep up with here with the trade deadline over the next 11 or so days. Yankees-Mariners series. Luis Severino, Felix Hernandez tonight. Masahiro Tanaka, Andrew Moore tomorrow. CC Sabathia, Ariel Miranda on Saturday. Luis Sessa and Sam Gaviglio on Sunday. Yankees avoid James Paxton in this series. That's very, very big for them. You know, this is a tough one for me to handle because the Yankees pen, if you give them a lead, they're going to finish it. Probably 95% of the time, they're going to finish it now with the personnel that they have out there. So the Yankees are a good live betting opportunity late with a lead in a tie game, maybe down a run, because that bullpen's going to keep them, you know, in striking distance or going to shut the game down. Now, the problem with the Yankees, of course, is their starting pitching. What do you get from Tanaka? What do you get from Sabathia? What do you get from Sessa? You don't know. You really don't know on a day-to-day basis what these guys are going to do. So we'll see how this series plays out for the Yankees. Like I said, I think the Mariners, you know, are a team that's going to hang around in this thing for a while, at least from a wild card standpoint. So big series for them here, catching a Yankees team off some travel from Minnesota. You know, we'll see how this whole thing plays out for the Mariners. Blue Jays and Indians. I've tried not to talk about the Indians here on this show, but they're coming off of an awful, horrible, no good 1-5 road trip. They need to get their act together here and do so soon. I mean, I've been talking about it. They're going to win the division. By how much is irrelevant, but it would be nice to see them actually play like, you know, a World Series contender like they are. Yeah, Marco Estrada, Trevor Bauer on Friday night, Marcus Stroman, Danny Salazar Saturday, Jay Happ and to be determined on Sunday. Corey Kluber dealing with a stiff neck, so he may not get a start here this weekend. But the Indians get a struggling team coming to town. Now, of course, they're a struggling team of their own. The Indians have not played well at home. They've played terrible in front of big crowds on Friday and Saturday nights. I would know because I've been at most of them. So, you know, I don't know what to do with either one of these teams right now. The Blue Jays are a team that I wanted to back because they've got those signs of positive regression with runners in scoring position, and they've also been really bad against right-handed pitching this year. Well, they'll face three of them here in this series, unless Ryan Merritt gets the spot start on Sunday. But, you know, Toronto's a team I thought had a chance to turn it around, had a higher ceiling. They haven't done it yet. At what point do I jump off that bandwagon, and can I do it to back an Indians team that has been a mess and has two tough matchups Saturday and Sunday? Stroman is very good. Happ is very underrated. You know, an interesting series for a lot of different reasons here. Maybe not from a betting standpoint, but from a, you know, looking at the future type of standpoint. So the Nationals and Diamondbacks was a series that I wanted to look at here, but I don't know what the pitching matchups are going to be now with Patrick Corbin slotting in on Thursday to take on the Reds. Initially, it was Scherzer, Corbin, Roark, Godley, Strasburg, and Ray. We'll see how they set things up, but Scherzer, Roark, and Strasburg going for the Nationals here in this one. Two big offenses. It's a hitter's park. We've got some really interesting pitchers here. Scherzer is obviously an elite-level starter. Zach Godley's been terrific this year. Strasburg and Ray are very good. Roark is a guy that I like for positive regression. Are unders the way to go here in this series? I don't know. They could be. But you know, I've been talking about fading Arizona and looking to fade the Diamondbacks. However, the Nationals are a long way from home, and they're facing a good team, which is something they haven't done a whole lot this year. Washington is 11-6 against teams 500 or better. 17 games against teams 500 or better. I think the next lowest in baseball, when I was looking right before the show, has played 29 games against teams 500 or better. So the Nationals, from a strength of schedule standpoint, have played virtually nobody. So we'll see what happens when they take on an Arizona team in a tough ballpark. You know, both of these offenses have been really, really good this year, though. I think there are a lot of things to consider here for this series, and I will preview all three of these games in my picks analysis pieces over the next 3 days. Cardinals and Cubs. Can the Cubs keep this thing going? Carlos Martinez, Jake Arrieta in the opener on Friday. Adam Wainwright, John Lester on Saturday. Michael Wacha, Jose Quintana on Sunday Night Baseball on Sunday. You've got a 2 o'clock, a 4 o'clock, and an 8 o'clock start here, Eastern Time, in this series. So that's a little bit different. What I want to look at here for this series is obviously, you know, the Cubs can keep this thing going. But also, you look ahead to Monday. The Cubs host the Chicago White Sox at 2:20. I think this is a makeup game from a rainout. Somebody will correct me on Twitter if I'm wrong. But Kyle Hendricks is supposed to come back to the Cubs rotation. That's not a good spot for the Cubs. You play your chief rival, you play a late game on Sunday Night Baseball, and then you have to play the lowly White Sox on Monday. White Sox could be in a great position to steal a game here as a big underdog on Monday. With Miguel Gonzalez, they will be a big underdog. There's been a fade of Gonzalez in the marketplace. So if you wait this line out on Monday, it probably goes up. But that is a game that I'm definitely looking at here coming out of this series. Of course, there's some intrigue to this series as well. A couple of lefties for the Cardinals. They don't hit lefties very well. Martinez goes on Friday night. If the Cubs can beat the ace on Friday, they could very well sweep this series. Now, Wacha pitched great against the Mets a couple nights ago, even hit 98 on the gun with his last pitch. So he's getting into a pretty good rhythm. But Jose Quintana is just a different kind of weapon for the Cubs. And I think that's a guy that they can ride here while they wait for a guy like Arrieta to get straightened out, or wait for Hendricks to come back, or wait for Lackey to figure it out. So the Cubs have a lot going for them right now, and this could be a series that showcases that. So plenty of thoughts here on today's show. We'll be back on the air again on Monday with another edition of the Bettor's Box. Thank you very much for joining me, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettor's Box.